This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Velo Solar.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. And it's a great day to be saving energy and especially saving money. In the studio with me today,
money.
As always, John Noel, my co-host. How's it going, John?
Oh, I'm ready to save some money.
Yeah, saving money is important. Living a sustainable life using technology. And in the studio today with us, Will Moyers of Valis Energy Consulting. Will, welcome back.
Hey, good to be here.
And Kevin Rowe of Rowe Insulating Company from out in Danielsville, Georgia.
Yeah, the big town.
Yeah, go Dogs.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, it's great to have you guys in the studio. And John, insulation's a big part of saving money, isn't it?
It's a big part. And I was looking at my insulation in my house. I think I'm all Mr. Sophisticated, and I'm not. I need the services of the gentleman over here. You couldn't make it to Atlanta anytime soon, could you?
Probably not.
Okay.
You know, he's a busy guy, and there's a lot of folks doing insulation. And, Will, you guys are doing a lot of evaluation with Jackson EMC, and you're trying to get out to as many members as possible. I know you did the energy audit in my house, and Kevin doing the insulating in my house. And it's just important for folks to get a checkup. John, how often do you see folks that are just spending way too much money and letting it just go out the window
the
or the ceiling?
And our guests are going to talk more about this as it is their business. So their business is a utility and business as a business. But just in my business, commercial buildings, residential buildings, people are wasting an unbelievable amount of money when they could be saving it on the utility bills, and they don't even know it until they get the audit that says, holy moly, I can save 30% of the utilities in my house.
And, you know, this... You know, and I know we're talking about Jackson EMC here, but Georgia Power has energy rebates as well. So getting this insulation done is going to lower the bills, guaranteed, isn't it, John?
It is.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, well, that assumes you turn on an air conditioner or a heater. I mean, you could have a vacant house. That's pretty efficient if you don't have any power. That's the essence of it. Ladies in the house want to be warm. Men in the house want to be cool. I mean, that's the nature of it, generally.
Yeah, there we go. Kevin, let me ask you, some of these older houses around, do you see many of these whole house fans, and do people run those, and do they save money?
Oh, yes and no. Back before air conditioners, that was a great thing, in my opinion.
But yes.
Since air conditioners or heat pumps come along, they're a big waste. Most of the time that they're not covered. When I go to them and, you know, check them out. And if they people don't understand, when your air conditioner is on or your heat, the return's most of the time close to the
whole house fan.
Uh-huh. So you're pulling cold air, if it's in the winter, into the through the fan.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Louvers.
Yeah.
Or if it's in the summer, you're pulling hot air.
Thought of that.
Right by the thermostat.
So, Will, let me ask you on this R factor. Define R factor for us first. What is an R factor?
Well, the R value is the resistance to
R
heat
value.
Flow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So that is the measure of how resistant to heat flow it is. So the higher that value, the better it's going to be an insulator.
So if you have a whole house fan like Kevin's talking about, and it's not insulated, are you losing some R factor?
It's huge. If it's more than one way. Just the straight matter of how much heat is passing through those louvers, because it's an air leak, it's an insulation leak, and since it's a big metal grill in the ceiling, if you hit that thing with an infrared camera, it's a giant space heater sitting in the ceiling.
So, Kevin, what do you do to fix that? How do you correct a whole house fan if a person says, well, I'm not really ever going to use this? How would you mitigate that and keep them from losing all this energy?
Well, normally, if you have room in the attic, we build a styrofoam box, 2-inch thick, R10 is the code for those, just to make them be air sealed. We'll take the belt off.
So you're putting a hat on it, and you're sealing that hat.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So, we've talked about this in a previous episode about the door, the attic door. I've got the pull down door made in 2015, but even with that, it needed that tent. Describe that tent to our audience.
Well, they have different types, but added tents, you can get them at Home Depot, Lowe's, wherever. But R10's a code. It's got an insulation inside of a foil on each side of it. Mm. And you set that over top of the pull-down stairway. Of course, you need to add weather stripping to that.
Mm-hmm.
These zipper-type air added tents that you can get also. We use those a lot of times on truss. When you have truss, you don't have enough room to put an added tent or enough height. And also, we build boxes sometimes, a 2-inch thick styrofoam box over the pull-down stairway also.
Wow. Will, I know when y'all came into my house that you saw these knee walls because of the, I guess, the way my ceiling was constructed.
Right.
And that foam board had fallen down. And one of the things that you said is that I had to correct that, right?
Right. So with knee walls, for folks that aren't exactly familiar with it, it's any vertical wall in an attic space. It's separating conditioned space from attic space. And those bats of insulation that you normally see in a vertical wall like that, when they're exposed to that hot attic heat, there are little air currents that whip through that insulation, and it acts like a loose-knit sweater on a windy day. So the R value of that bat of insulation is effectively cut in half whenever it's not boarded up and sealed up on the backside like a normal vertical standing wall.
Mm-hmm.
So in an attic where you've got typically an R18, R19 bat, you're cutting that insulation value in half effectively in the hottest part of the house. You know, we were talking about outside earlier. We were catching up. Kevin has been a part of that Jackson EMC program forever. When I started doing energy audits in the field, you know, 10, 11 years ago, Kevin was one of the first contacts I ran into on insulation. And we were just talking about how far we've come code-wise, where before 2008, we weren't even requiring this. And this
Tell
is, it's insane the difference that it makes. But we were talking about how, you know, outside summertime, we might get a high temperature of 95 degrees. Well, that, what'd you say, that attic's about 130 degrees, Kevin?
Yeah, 130. So we see 140s and some.
Right. So you're talking about cutting your insulation value effectively in half in the most crucial point in that house. It's insane.
So correcting that, what did you have to do to correct that knee wall in my house, Kevin?
Well, you already had foam board on your knee wall, but it wouldn't attach good. It was laying away from the insulation, so air gets behind that between the foam board and the insulation, so it's not doing any good. On a new home or existing home, there's supposed to be an air seal mm-hmm. behind the walls to stop the air leak mm-hmm. like that, but a lot of times people just putting, house wrap, foil bubble foil or some type of product plastic behind it, but it's not sealed and it's not doing the correct job that's supposed to be done.
Well, Will, you know, as y'all did the audit, you had an A, B, C, and D area,
right?
And Jackson EMC required me to do everything on the A and B category that needed to be done, and then eventually to give attention to C and D, but it wasn't mandatory. So What did you find? I only had the insulation that I had to deal with on an A area, but you found something on a C area and a D area that you felt that I would eventually need to give attention to.
Certainly. On your one C area, and it's high priority A items down to D, your C item, we looked at the overall balance on your house. One of the things we want to do is we want to tailor our findings to what the customer's dealing with. So when we came in and introduced ourselves, you said, well, you know, everything, new house, I'm just getting used to it. I've noticed a little bit of a difference from one room to another. So we keyed in on that and we went to do some investigating. And as we ran an airflow analysis room by room to see how much air is coming out of each vent, we saw telltale signs of an imbalance where the room, one room's getting overserved for its size compared to another room that's getting underserved. So one of our long-term recommendations to help you to live more comfortably in the house is to get some manual dampers into that duct system and have a qualified contractor help you adjust the airflow so that it's trimmed out right and all the rooms raise and lower
manual
at the same
damper.
Rate.
Manual damper. What is a manual damper? I got manual. I got that. I'm smart. Damper. Tell me more about dampers.
Okay. So a manual damper for HVAC is simply
a louver in.
Inside
the duct.
Yep.
And it's the duct is the thing that transmits the cool air or the hot air from
right.
the furnace or the air conditioner to my room.
Exactly. And in manual dampers, if they're located close to the source of that airflow, the HVAC air handler, the machinery that's up in your attic or in your basement, you can effectively change very well the balance of that airflow. A lot of times we're dampering, so to speak, by changing the grill in the room.
Well, yeah, what's wrong with that? That's how I've always done it.
Yeah, it'll help cut some air out of a room.
Right.
But you're talking about trying to back pressure 30 foot of duct before it gets to the unit.
It's got to run all the way to get there. What you're saying is intercept it by the furnace. And then we're not fighting this.
Exactly, because you think about that machine that's up there. It's a fan.
Right.
The more resistance you put on it, the less efficiently it's going to operate. So you want to maximize the efficiency of the equipment while getting the comfort that you're looking for out of that duct system.
And my co-host is acting like he's surprised, but he's actually an energy expert himself.
Well, listen, the average, as the old expression is, the average man on the street, the average woman or man on the street doesn't know what a damper is, doesn't know all these other. So I want to know, and you're a very generous guest to explain it to us. But what I think is also important is people understand that they have the option to check the volume. How did you check the volume? Now this one, Mr. Smarty Pants here, did not know. You're telling me you put a tester on every room in his house, and you knew the volume in his house? Explain that one.
All right. So what we use is the technology
called 30 seconds.
Airflow hoods.
Or 20.
And as air passes through this gauge, we can count how many cubic feet of air per minute.
You stick a gauge on each one. Mm-hmm. You got 20 gauges, 10 gauges, whatever it is.
One gauge, one by one.
One by one you do it.
Okay. Add them all up.
Okay.
Develop a chart.
Well, I'll be darned.
Yeah, yeah.
Very complicated.
Yeah.
Well, look, I actually want to keep this conversation going here. So we're going to hold these guys over for another segment. So you hang on. And we're gonna help you figure out how to make your house more comfortable. Stick around. I'm Tim Eccles.
The electric car revolution is coming, and the choices are growing. GEM cars are everywhere. You've seen these low-speed electric vehicles on college campuses, downtown Atlanta streets, and resort islands like St. Simons and Jekyll. GEM cars are street legal, equipped with seatbelts, headlights, and a tag, and can operate on roads with speed limits of 35 miles per hour or less. If you want to know more about these electric cars and trucks, six-passenger shuttles, mobile repair service, or full vehicle wraps, go to GEMCarService.com. That's GEMCarService.com.
John, one of our sponsors for the show, Rowe Insulating Company, is doing a great job in and around Athens, being able to do a lot of what we talk about every single week on the show.
Every time it gets cold, every time it gets hot, it's always that attic that's the problem. And you could attack windows, and that's going to cost you a cold fortune. It is insulation that can solve the problem.
Hey, if you want to get this fixed, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Support for Energy Matters is provided by Velo Solar. Founded in 2007 by Mark Bell and Chuck Clark, over the years Velo has designed, engineered, and built medium to large scale solar projects all over the country. Velo has also engineered and designed a monitoring software portfolio called Power Info. Power Info smart grid software has the ability to measure everything in your building that either produces power or pulls energy. Solar, lighting, HVAC, air, water, even steam, allowing our customers, they say, to increase their energy efficiency. For more info, go to velosolar.com. So we were talking just off mic a moment ago about the new energy codes, and this is something when I was in the legislature, I was fighting hard for more efficient state buildings and all these kinds of things that just seemed so distant. And here we are, a decade plus later, and you're telling me there's going to be a new energy code and new improvements to air sealing, which is where all the stupid, waste is. It's
right.
Like, duh, why aren't we doing this? Tell us about that.
Yeah, in fact, we were talking off mic. It was one of Kevin's earlier comments where he was talking about one of the missed opportunities that a lot of insulators miss is that you have to air seal that attic floor where your drywall, your ceiling is. If you're looking in the house, looking up, you see the drywall ceiling. There are some air sealing opportunities with wiring penetrations and top plates and stuff like that that are missed. And we see this as being one of the big linchpin moments for adopting and actually implementing this next code change. And for those that aren't familiar with the code change, we're going from a target of 7 air changes per hour at 50 pascals of pressure. That's the nerdy measure. It's a target of 7 down to a target of 5.
It's
a big deal.
I know percentages.
Yes.
And that's like a whole big percentage.
It's a whole big percentage. Okay. Yes. So we're looking at changing the way that we look at new construction and certifying houses as code compliance by fundamentally shifting that landscape with air sealing. And Kevin pointed out aptly that that's one of the last things that we have got to tackle in new construction, with these builders looking at the top of those interior wall assemblies.
Give us the greatest example of this. I think I know where this is going to be, and it's going to be can lights. But that about right? I mean,
it is. It's related. Actually,
now, Tim's got can lights, if I'm not mistaken, in his house, and I think I saw them in your energy audit that you pointed that out, right?
Can lights going through a ceiling is one area, but that's the one that everybody sees. There's one hidden area that you don't think about. If you think about an interior wall, you have drywall on either side, and as you go up to the ceiling where it turns the corner at the top of that wall, you have a top plate on that wall, drywall butts up against one side, drywall butts up against the other side.
But nothing on the interior.
On the interior, where that wood meets the drywall on the backside, there is this hairline crack. Doesn't seem that big. But
they're all over the house.
All over the house. So if you take the linear measurement of every interior wall, multiply it by 2,
right,
you end up with almost a mile of interior wall cavity, and it's only a hairline gap, but that adds up. It's
huge. Oh, save it.
Yeah. So depends on the house. Folks, we've seen them.
But I like you. Exactly.
John, our audience, they're sitting there. Yeah. They're sipping their coffee.
They're like,
they're trying to wake up. And
we're talking about pascals.
And this is why you need to hire a professional.
That's true.
To come to your house, especially if you have an older house. You know, John, I get a lot of calls from people, especially in the summertime, about high energy bills. And one of the things that I most frequently say is, look, let me get you with the power company and get you a free energy audit. And so you can begin to see some of the areas that you need to invest in.
Right.
And frankly, John, when I moved into my house recently, we downsized, you know, that getting an energy audit was the, you know, the top priority once I got moved in. Before I'd even touched up any paint, I had Will come out.
That was smart.
And then and then Kevin came out to evaluate, okay, is there anything else that we're going to need to do while we're up there to make sure that this thing is set up? So, Will, let's just tell our audience again basically what you found with my insulation and what I need to do.
So your biggest priority with insulation is getting the overall value up. You've got a few small spots with the knee walls and the like that need to
overall
be adjusted.
Overall value, what value? This is the R value?
The R value for the attic. How much of that heat?
I'm going back. That's resistance against heat.
Heat flow, that's right.
Okay. So the higher the number, the better.
So, and Kevin was pointing out earlier, your attic hatch, having that one spot of low insulation changes the average for the entire attic. So you want to take a look at those low spots, but overall, let's get the average level of insulation for that attic up so that that 130, 140 degree heat that you've got in your attic stays in the attic and it doesn't come down.
Kevin, tell our audience, how intrusive is this process? You're going to bring a truck out there, right, to their home. You've got a hose that's coming in. You're going to crawl up in the attic. Can the family be there? Do they have to leave? Is it noisy? What's it like adding insulation to an attic?
It ain't pretty.
Yeah, well, you just have to. We put poly down on the floor to protect the floors. We have to pull a hose in the house to go up into the attic, wherever the attic hatch is or pull down is. You go have a machine that's got a motor on it that's running in on the outside. We in and out of the house some. You're going to hear us hopefully keep our feet on the floor joists, not coming through the ceiling. But it just depends on what all we have to do to how long it takes.
Do insulation crews ever fall through ceilings? Does that happen?
Yes.
Yeah, but we don't like to talk about it.
Yeah.
But we just have to fix it.
But is that... What happens on something like that? If there's damage done by the crew, is that something that the homeowner's responsible
liability.
For, or is there the contractor liable for that?
We're liable.
Yeah. And so you got to take care of that, fix it as if it were brand new, I guess.
So some people talk about the need, and this is something I'm going to have to do in my house too. Why the subject is close to me. I started spray foam, didn't finish it. Which is insane. Okay, yeah. So half of my roof deck spray foam. Go figure. But I have old wool bats from like 1935. So when I do a proper job, I'm going to need to rip those out. I want them out before you blow in.
That's right.
So that's a whole nother project, right? I mean, you coming in and extracting those, that is no fun, whether it's Pink Panther or it's a 1935 wool bat.
Pretty good job. Yep.
Yeah.
Kind of hard and of course, you
and messy.
Get,
a little messy.
Messy.
Let me I want to, Kevin, what's the most difficult job that you've had in the Athens area, and what was it like?
Oh, I don't remember. We've had so many bad ones. Most time it's a real low area we have to work in.
Uh-huh. Like a crawl space.
Yeah, crawl space is it.
And is it even worse in the summertime? Is it burning up
yes,
up there?
Yes, it is a lot hotter. You know, when it's a lot hotter, it's rougher on us. Can't stay so
hard
long
and
at it.
Yeah.
You know, we have to worry about snakes. Had a guy get snake bit.
In the attic?
Year. No, in the crawl space.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
You get stung by wasps, a lot of wasps in the attic, stuff like this. You just don't think about it.
You got to have tough employees. The guy in Atlanta does this. Said he had he has a guy, they call him Octopus. Because he can get into any hole.
Yes. Seriously, is it that small?
The guy's name is Octopus.
Every good insulation company has one.
Yeah. Everybody's got an octopus.
You know, we talk about the difficulty of finding craft labor at our power plants and things. Is it difficult to find installers working with insulation companies?
Are you hiring? Maybe that's the other
very
way.
Very hard. Yeah. Because it's a hard job. We do, you know, it's hard work and it's hot or cold and it's low and. This is painful on the knees and back, and it's just hard to find people that want to do that type of work. But that's just over the overall industry.
It's construction people, stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, people don't want to work that hard.
Yeah. Well, as you guys go out and you do this evaluation a lot, do you find that consumers like me, as I watch you guys do the blower test, and do you find that they take action, they do something, they're pleased with the changes?
Yes. For the most part, as long as we don't go over people's heads, and we try to identify where that customer is at, and we speak to what their problems are, and we are addressing that problem, they'll take action. If we get way too nerdy and we get off into technology that they're not ready for.
Pascal land.
Yeah, Pascal land. So somebody that isn't familiar with the – I'm nerding out here.
This is Nerdathon. Yeah, no, I love it.
But when we're dealing with customers, as long as we can keep it on a basic fundamental level and then rely on good contractors coming behind us to quote the right jobs,
right.
We can stay high level, keep the customer engaged, help them make the right choices as far as which goals to tackle, and then we get a tremendous result as far as what they go after, and the bills come down, comfort goes up, everybody's happy.
Kevin, Jackson EMC has you on their list, right? And
yes.
So is it tough making that list? Do they come behind you and check and what kind of accountability is there from a utility like Jackson EMC?
Yeah, they check our, you know, behind our work. I wished all work was checked in the state. Right now you're able to test your own work, do a blower door, and I don't agree with that.
You can do that? You can test it yourself?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You know, if you want to, you can make any job you do pass if you wanted to, and I don't agree with that, but I'm just a little, you know, country boy.
I didn't even know you could do that.
You know, as you think about a homeowner out there maybe buying a new home, right? What advice would you have for a new homeowner? Maybe they're just going with an agent and they're looking at the house. Kevin, what would you say to that homeowner, that husband and wife, or a couple walking through that house trying to determine, is this an energy efficient house?
You're talking about a new home?
Yeah, brand new home.
Well, you could tell them you want to see the report. The blower door test, the duct blaster test, what kind of insulation is in your home, what's the R value that you have in the attic, things like that to help you know and sort of tell what your bill maybe, you know, between what you put your thermostat on.
Or how chintzy and cheap the construction was and you know, using code R value stuff versus, you know, some of the more fancier and higher R-value stuff.
Well, to our audience, I hope we've geeked you out completely today. But more importantly, we hope that you'll order an energy audit and that you'll do something about that. Will, just a big thank you to Vallis and the work that you guys are doing. Thanks for being here today.
Appreciate the time.
And Kevin, and you know, you guys are the ones out there sweating and doing all this work and helping us save money. So we really appreciate the great job that you're doing, and thanks for the great job that you did for me.
Thank you, Tim.
Yeah. John, this is important, and folks need to take it seriously, and they can save a lot of money. So stick around. We've got more conversation on energy and why it matters coming up.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Echols and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold, Golden, and Gregory.
And we're back on Energy Matters. I'm Tim Echols, my co-host John Noel. John, how's it going?
Yes, sir. Mighty fine.
Let's take a turn. I want to talk about something that we have a whole bunch of in Georgia. Trees.
Sure do.
Forestry. Mm-hmm. And to me, one of the most sustainable industries that we have in the studio. Bunch of UGA grads here today. You know, I'm a triple dog. I've got Matt Hestead. He graduated from the UGA College of Ag, went down to Piedmont Academy down in Monticello, Georgia. Welcome, Matt.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, and we are proud of Georgia trees and our forest, and we've got a guy that uses some of those as he advises companies about sustainability practices, Rex Hamry, a Terry College grad from UGA. Rex, you're the Southeast Sustainability Director for JLL. What is JLL?
JLL, thanks for having me, Tim. JLL is Jones Lang LaSalle. We're a commercial real estate services firm.
Big guys. They do big stuff.
Over 80,000 employees worldwide, and we provide comprehensive commercial real estate services to all different forms of asset classes. So anything around buildings, operation, construction, sustainability, we provide those services
and
to companies.
You've been called on to help make buildings more sustainable. What are some of the recognizable properties that you've worked on?
Oh, that's a great question. So, for example, just finished up the first phase of NCR's world headquarters. A lot of people see that driving up and down the Atlanta connector there. 800,000 square foot project when
brand
it's
new.
All finished. Yep.
Yeah. That's that black glass building almost hanging out over the connector.
That's right.
Kind of near the varsity if you love that landmark like I do. What else?
Yeah, absolutely. And also Mercedes-Benz, new North American headquarters. They're at Perimeter. We also manage sustainability services for that new North American headquarters project. Also very neat, you know, new construction project. And then, of course, SunTrust Park on behalf of the Atlanta Braves.
Wow. These are big properties, big buildings.
Absolutely. We work on, there's lots of 10,000 square foot projects that we're lucky enough to work on, but also there's, we specialize as well in, you know, million square foot projects and are comfortable in that space as well.
Wow. Well, John, let's dive into this because this area of forestry, it has this intersection with me at the Public Service Commission because of biomass energy. So, Matt, let me ask you, when we say the word biomass, what does that mean?
Yeah, so broadly speaking, biomass energy is a renewable source that comes from an organic material. So that can actually be plant materials like animal manure, crops like corn. You guys have heard about corn, and then wood. And these organic materials release energy in the form of chemical energy when they're burned. So when you think about woody biomass, that's kind of broadly defined as the trees and woody plants, including limbs, tops. So those are going to be the limbs that come out from the top of the tree, and the needles, the leaves, and the other woody parts of the tree.
But not the leaves.
What you would consider the extra part of the tree.
So let's think about our pine plantations, right? We see those all over the state. And I know that at the commission, even back before I got there, our commission approved a certain amount of biomass energy from woody biomass. And we had a difficult time filling that quota that we had assigned it, because it's pretty expensive to create an energy plant around this. Why is it so expensive to use woody biomass for energy?
Yeah, so right now the cost of building a plant that produces biomass energy is very high. And not only that, but the actual cost for energy needs to justify the high cost of coming out there and chipping the woody biomass and hauling it to the facility. And right now our energy prices just aren't that high.
John, utility-scale solar,
natural
gas, exactly. All of that's cheaper than biomass.
This is the competition. Your competition is cheap, 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 and that's the problem.
But it's unfortunate, because we've got 22 million acres of trees, and it's too bad that we can't use this residue, this extra forest, residue. What would you call it, Matt, the stuff that's left there?
It's just the extra harvest material that comes, you know, when you come on site and you're harvesting for lumber, or one of the other 5,000 products that Georgia provides, it's the extra part of that tree.
So to think about pellets, I know I've been to Waycross and I've seen them making pellets, exporting them to Germany and England. What's the composition of those pellets?
So it's going to be predominantly pine, and they will actually use a small diameter tree for those wood pellets, because it gives you a really clean burning wood pellet that provides you with a lot of energy. So, and they're actually exporting those to Europe in order to meet their renewable energy standards.
Which is in the Kyoto Protocol.
That's right.
Yeah.
The way that we manage forests in the South, after you plant, you wait until a tree is about 10 to 15 years old, and then you're given an opportunity to thin that forest. You really need to thin that forest at that stage, just like you would your garden. You know, when you plant crops in a row, it gets to a certain level where you gotta reduce the amount of plants per row. So in that stage, you really have two different ways that you can go. You can sell your wood for pulp and paper, or now,
which is a pretty depressed market, or has been for a long time, or has it come back?
Well, right now we're seeing with the cardboard market kind of picking up with e-commerce and stuff like that. Mm. It's picking up where newsprint kind of
falling
off.
Yeah, let's take an ideal scenario. Let's say we're down near Albany, Georgia, or another place where we've got a biomass boiler that can use use wood chips. So as they're harvesting a pine plantation for pulp or for paper, and there's limbs and there's tops of trees. I mean, ideally, after that logging crew comes in there, you've got a chipping crew that then comes behind it, and they pretty much take everything, don't they?
That's exactly right. Yeah, there, and that's because you're given the opportunity to sell that material, and that's kind of the big success story about biomass. Is otherwise that material would just be piled up and burned on the property.
Ugh. So, John,
because you have no use
John,
for that.
John, yeah. Put your environmental hat on.
Oh,
which,
my environmental
which
hat
zone?
Is already it's on. Zone. It's like
you got so many
like
hats.
One of those rubber hats.
Yeah, yeah.
Nano.
So think about this, John. Would you rather have a chipping crew come in, chip everything up, and take it and use it for energy? Or would you rather leave it in the field, have it piled up and kerosene and diesel poured on it, and burn right there in the field? I mean, as an environmentalist, what would be your choice?
Given those two options, and I would submit there could be a third or fourth option, but given those two options, I would like to see that remediated properly and turned into energy composted in some particular way.
Okay, what about just leaving stuff laying out in the field and not burning it and just having it turn to methane? How do you feel like about
that? Well, it also could be construed as being fertilizer for the next bunch of trees. I mean,
that's
the other way to look at it. You know?
Well, and there's also a forest health risk when you leave material on the ground like that.
What is forest health risk?
So,
PR guy saying forest health risk sounds like a code word for...
Yeah, in this case, it's wildfire. So,
okay.
When you're building a fire, what do you start with, Tim? little sticks.
Yeah.
And those
so
little
that's
sticks.
Your kindling, and then next thing that's you know, your forest is up, and that forest is,
It could be. And in the best case scenario, it just gets absorbed back into the ground, but.
You know, John, not that we have that many California listeners. but I want you to think,
you don't care how good how they do it in California.
You know, let's think about this.
Yes,
in California, when you have a fire like the campfire,
that
there's enough CO2 emitted.
Yeah,
during that wildfire, I am told by experts in 1 week to undo all the savings that they make on their solar and their electric cars. I mean, it seems to me that. That getting a handle on this forestry issue is something that a state like California simply has to do. I mean, what do you think is keeping them from doing something like that? Have you looked at that? Is it the environmental
movement? That's a good
question.
I think in that particular instance, I think it has to do a lot more with heavier particulate matter that will be coming down to Earth faster than some of the other stuff that we'll be putting up in the sky and. So I'm not a scientist on it, but I would be interested to hear that. My guess is that we ought to be doing the right things that we're doing, and we ought to be mitigating the if we're going to continue to do wood farming or do have forestry, we need to be able to capture the remnants and turn them into energy. That doesn't sound unrealistic to
me. Yeah, Matt. I mean, have you guys looked at what's happening in California? I mean, how do you objectively describe what's gone on there?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, you just have to recognize, I mean, what a devastating thing for those residents. And it's a difficult thing to talk about when you live on the East Coast because, you know, we don't know exactly what they've done. And
well,
what
our president sure doesn't know.
Do.
He thinks it should have been raking. That would have solved the problem there. We just need to do
more
raking.
And what it boils down to is, in California, the majority of your forest land is going to be owned by the government. It's kind of inverse of what it is here in Georgia. So Georgia actually leads the nation in the pure quantity of privately owned, commercially available forests, about 22 million acres. And here
in Georgia, 22 million acres
in Georgia, and it's the inverse in California. You got the majority of the land, the forest land in California, is going to be owned by the
state
and
federal,
the federal government. So, what they have done, in I think probably an effort to do what they think is the right thing, they've put regulations in place on logging practices and forest management practices.
Let's keep the conversation going. Let's keep these guys over another segment, John.
Yeah,
I mean, this is
I'd
important.
Like that. Yeah, I mean, because there are other issues at play here. Climate change being one of them. It isn't just forest management. It's a whole world's getting hotter, things are getting more on fire.
And forestry is a great, sustainable industry in our state. Stick around. We're going to talk more with Matt and Rex when we get back.
You've heard about Jim Cars on Energy Matters. Made by Polaris in Anaheim, California, these street-legal, small electric vehicles go where golf carts are not allowed. Equipped with seatbelts, headlights, optional doors, and a tag, Jim Cars and Trucks are perfect for shuttles, corporate, or college campus use. In fact, Georgia Tech has over 100 of them. The new generation Jims have many options when selecting the battery type, onboard chargers, and enclosures to suit the climate. Go to GemCarService.com to find out more. That's GemCarService.com.
Hey, it's Commissioner Tim Echols, host of Energy Matters. I want to tell you about Kevin Rowe and Rowe Insulating Company. If you need insulation anywhere within 60 miles of Athens, Georgia, you need to call 706-795-2854. It's important, isn't it, John?
It is the most important thing you can do in your house.
It's the low-hanging fruit of everything that we talk about on Energy Matters every single week.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Get comfortable. Welcome back to Energy Matters. Support for Energy Matters comes from Arnold, Golden, and Gregory. AGG takes a business sensibility approach when advising clients. AGG provides industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG's transaction, litigation, regulatory, privacy counselors serve clients in healthcare, real estate, litigation, business transactions, fintech, global commerce, government investigations, which you don't want to get involved in, and logistics and transportation. AGG subscribes to the belief not if, but how. We appreciate their weekly support of Energy Matters, Tim.
And John, I hate to say it, but you're the only non-Bulldog sitting in this room. We've got we've got me, the triple
I've been
dog.
Outed.
And you know, English major, nonprofit organizations, and another master's in PR. We got Rex Hamry here. Rex, what were you? You were Terry College, right?
That's right, real estate program.
Yeah, how was that? Good experience?
It's one of the best in the country.
Yeah.
It is.
You know, the only time I ever went in that Terry building was for economics, and I did poorly, and part of it, I think, I was playing ping pong across the street over at the Baptist Student Union. I was really into ping pong at the time, and I skipped a lot of classes for
probably
ping pong.
Not beer there, though.
Yeah, there was no beer.
Yeah,
you can't
sure.
even you can't even take a bottle of
where
beer.
Where I went, it was ping pong and beer, but
yeah. And also in studio with us, Matt Hested. Matt, you were an Ag South Campus guy, right?
That's right.
Yeah, did you grow up on a farm or anything? Why did you pick ag?
I did. My dad was a rancher and a horse trainer, so I grew up on the equine and cattle side
wow.
of the business, and got into agriculture because it was a way of life for us with my family. So
yeah, and John, cool. even though you're not a bulldog, you did grow up on a farm, though. You guys
sure did.
Learned all
rode horses.
Yeah, yeah. You learned everything you know about sustainability right there.
That's basically true.
At the farm.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and you were a history major. Where did you go to college, John?
Lake Forest College, a little liberal arts college up a little north of Chicago. Got out of Dodge.
Yeah, well, good.
It was cold.
Good to have you in the South. Well, guys, we're
good
talking about forestry. We're talking about biomass. Let me go to Rex before we talk about the economic impact of forestry. Rex, you are advising companies on sustainability, and how often does wood or using a forest product come up? Do you have clients that say, hey, we want things to look natural, we want to use wood on our floor, on our wall? How often does that come up?
It comes up very regularly, actually. So, you know, first of all, wood is a structural construction product in a lot of our different projects. So you have the option first when you're doing the initial design of, you know, is wood a viable option for constructability, maybe instead of steel or instead of concrete? And that's exciting because, of course, things we talked about already, the carbon footprint of wood is much better than something like concrete or steel construction.
That's a good point. So, I think people forget, you know. So in a given wall, wood, concrete, or steel, no question, wood is the more environmentally friendly way to construct that wall. I mean,
hey, yeah. Wood, doesn't wood absorb CO2?
That's right.
Yeah. Any of you scientists know anything about that, John? Deal.
What?
Yeah.
Are we talking about Pascal's again or CO2? What?
Yeah, Rex. Why?
Bail us out, Rex.
Why do companies like to use wood?
So, you know, the inherent carbon neutrality of wood mm-hmm. is really attractive. We also have, you know, the capability of sourcing it locally, depending on the type of wood product, and of course, it's also inherently renewable. So and quickly renewable. So we have that advantage when we're talking about wood construction or using wood products. Expanding out beyond that, you know, wood, as you said, is that natural element. So biophilic design, using a
Whoa.
Term that's new for a lot of
Whoa.
People, is something that's becoming increasingly important.
Biophilic
design and the theory of biophilia. So that's the idea that people have a natural tendency to want to experience the outdoors and nature. And so incorporating that into your buildings and your built environment, that's a way for people to you actually see productivity gains, happiness gains within buildings by incorporating biophilia. So wood has in working
not
within the design.
Okay, it is. It is sounded
illegal.
A little sketchy there for a minute, but I got you.
This has nothing to do with marijuana.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I got excited.
So give me an example of a biophilia. A design that was incorporated, say, at that new NCR building you worked on downtown?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the simplest first is, of course, you know, having actual plants within the facility. And so, but then it goes much further beyond that. So you can actually use other elements, such as, you know, wood for artistic construction within the natural
trim.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then also elements that look like, say, for example, a type of plant, but are actually constructed out of metal, and you have multiple uses there for that. So those are a couple of the examples where elements that have the same feel as nature, but don't necessarily have to be, you know, living plants.
So I was down recently, Matt, at Beasley Forest Products in Hazelhurst, Georgia, in Jeff Davis County, and he has all these different companies that supply various types of wood products. Do you see a lot of builders asking for Georgia-grown wood products, or do you see Georgia Forestry Association marketing or helping to market our wood products, I guess, for floors or other things? What's some of the most popular things you see?
One of the biggest things that we're working on right now is an innovative product called Mass Timber. There's a few different ways that can be used, but cross-laminated timber is the primary use, and it's dimensional wood that's stacked up one direction, and then the next layer is stacked up the other direction.
Structural stability.
That's harder. Right. That's right. And so it's essentially like a big piece of plywood that's made out of 2x4s. And when you construct these big mass timber panels, it unlocks the potential to build tall wood buildings out of wood instead of steel and concrete, as we were talking about. Yeah. And there's a lot of benefits with that from an environmental and economic perspective.
And a lot of benefits to the wood industry because you use more wood.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. Let's talk about this economic impact of the industry. I mean, how many jobs do we have in the forest industry, and is it growing? Is it decreasing? What are you seeing in terms of economic impact and jobs?
Yeah, so Georgia Tech and the Georgia Forestry Commission release a study annually on the economic impact of forests in the state, and we have about 147,000 jobs directly.
147,000
jobs.
Directly
or indirectly.
That's a lot. Okay, and that's grown from about 144,000 in the previous year. So we have seen an increase over time. It's about a $35.9 billion industry, and there's a lot of benefits that come from the forest just being there. $4.6 billion in outdoor recreation activity, $970 million in state tax revenues generated from the industry as well. So a great industry to be a part of.
John, we talked a little bit about biomass, and I know that it's been a hot button for me, wanting to do more biomass power generation because of this residue that we talked about in the last segment, the treetops, the limbs, the pine cones that are left there, because there simply is not any kind of value proposition to pick those things up and haul them very far. You have to have a boiler, a plant, within a certain number of miles, about 40 or 50, to make it worthwhile, because the longer you have to haul that stuff, the more expensive it is.
And diesel. And
yeah, exactly. And so, you know, we've, at the commission, we've tried to, as best we can, to allocate some megawatts for biomass, but it's been a little bit controversial, frankly. The Dogwood Alliance out of Asheville.
Good people.
The Sierra Club. They have banged down my door about this because they just feel like it's not the best use of the wood. And they really are against it. And even though the Kyoto Protocol may allow Great Britain and other European countries to count it as zero CO2, right, that technically it's really not zero. And that we're playing funny math. Matt?
And I just want to make one point clear. I mean, there's really three different products that are coming from biomass. So you have wood pellets that are being exported overseas. That accounts for about 0.08% of the overall harvest volume in the South.
Wow, 1%?
0.08%.
0.08.
Wow. Yeah, and so a lot of the heartache that people are having about, you know, us cutting down all of our forests and exporting them across the big pond is just not true. It's a very, very fractional percent of what we harvest and produce.
Let's grant that. What's the next point?
Yeah, so you have wood pellets that are being exported. Then there are products that we use here domestically. So, and those come in two formats. One, wood chips that come from logging residues. That's what we've talked about up until this point, the extra part of the tree. And then there's actually a product that comes from mill residues. So a sawmill produces extra you know, pieces from lumber that don't make it to the final product. And we're using that that mill residue to produce energy on site at paper mills.
I think I've seen this at some paper mills. So after Rex is done using the product, the raw product in his sustainably built construction projects, you guys are taking the residue, the sawdust, right, to then burn a boiler or turn a boiler and create heat for what? Process to dry out the wood or something?
Well, no. It creates energy on site at the mill, and then in some cases you have...
So sticking it to the man a little bit on that energy production on site.
There you go. And in some cases we're putting power back on the grid. And that's with our 14 pulp and paper manufacturers across the state. In a lot of cases, they're doing that, which is good for our local communities.
Well, John, we've run out of time on this topic, but clearly forestry's critical industry in Georgia, and it's something that I want us to continue to push and with my time on the commission. Thanks so much for being a part of this segment, Matt. Thanks for your work. And Rex, thank you for being a part of our show as well.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Tim Eccles, and energy does matter.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Eccles and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking projectshareinfo.com. And thank you.